Directors for Wednesday, February 27th. Could we have a roll call, please?
Director Gibson?
Here.
Director Villa?
Here.
Director Repolo?
Here.
Vice President White?
Here.
President Austin? Sorry.
You're all absent. Yeah. Could you join me with the flag salute? Attention, salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Moving on to the agenda review, I think first I would like to move the closed session to the end of tonight's meeting. And then I would ask if anyone else has any changes.
I did not, Carrie. Did you?
Okay. Entertain a motion.
Move closed session to the end of the meeting.
Okay. And the agenda.
And the agenda.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
Roll call, please.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Polo?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
Vice President Wayne?
Yes. Yes. Before I call for the public comment period, I wanted to read public comment period provides an opportunity for members of the public to address the board on matters of interest within the jurisdiction of the district that are not listed on the agenda. If a matter of the public wishes to speak at this time, public comment is limited to 3 minutes. Anyone who would like to come forward and speak? Seeing nobody come forward, we'll move on to staff reports. And I believe the sheriff's department is here, and I would like to invite
Jeff.
I wasn't sure of your rank because I couldn't see your sergeant.
Okay. Sergeant Jeff Nichols.
Thank you.
And thank you very much. I'm here for the Sheriff's South Station. I just wanted to provide you with some general statistics for what occurred in our community here in Oceano and the surrounding areas in the month of January. So with that, I'm going to read off some general statistics, and if anybody has any questions when I'm done, I'll be happy to entertain those questions. So in January, we had about 14 family disturbances resulting in one arrest. We had 22 pedestrian stops for various reasons that resulted in about 6 arrests. We had about 22 bicycle stops for various reasons, which resulted in about 6 arrests. We had 114 vehicle stops in the month of January. And that led to 14 arrests. We had some trespassing incidents. I don't have any specific information regarding the trespass. That could be on private property or public property or a private business or something of that nature where somebody was trespassing. We had 10 incidents of vandalism. And that could be anywhere from personal property, vehicle, to structure vandalism. We have no arrests associated with those vandalisms. We have had some mail thefts and some unauthorized, what we call unauthorized use of access information or credit cards or things like that, identity theft, for lack of a better term. The mail thefts seem to coincide with people that are being taken into custody, so typically a lot of the people that are involved in the drug community are the ones committing the mail thefts. A majority of the mail thefts are unsecured mailboxes. People don't get their mail. They're left there overnight. People going around in the middle of the night are taking mail. That goes along with thefts from vehicles. We had I think, 10 reports on thefts from vehicles in the month of January. I would just strongly encourage the community and every private person to make sure that they don't leave valuables in their car or leave their car unsecured. People will go by in the middle of the night and simply pull on the door handles, and if the car opens, then they're going to go inside and see what they can take and take advantage of. Those types of crimes are very difficult to investigate. There's typically no physical evidence. They're wearing gloves. We can't get latent fingerprints. Very seldom is there video surveillance available, unless it's right next to a residence that may happen to have video surveillance. So those are very difficult crimes to investigate and to prove. We had 6 burglary reports. Those are typically, I think only one of those was a residential burglary report where somebody went in to a residence and took some items. The occupants weren't home. The remaining of those are people accessing a locked vehicle where they actually break into a locked vehicle. That's categorized as a burglary versus just a theft. No robberies. We have had 0 juvenile problems in the month of January, other than 3 runaway reports. We've had 2 public intoxication arrests, and I believe those both came from the Pier Avenue area. 0 sexual assaults. We had 5 incidents of domestic violence, 3 of which resulted in arrests. We've had no assault with a deadly weapon or any other violent crime other than the homicide, of course, which is currently being investigated. And for any of you that might want to ask questions about that, I can't tell you anything about it because it's currently under investigation. So I apologize for that. Just to give you a quick update on the homelessness and or transient things affecting the Oceano area, we continue to be vigilant on addressing the problem and being proactive. We went through a major program about a year and a half ago to clear out the levee, and that's remained largely clear. However, some of those have moved onto the state park property closer to the beach. We're addressing that with state parks and trying to come to some kind of determination as to what we're going to do. We are currently meeting with our community action team, which is our outreach team that deals with homelessness and the transient populations, offering more than just law enforcement. They offer services and things like that to try to help those people improve their situations and actually get off the street. There's a lot of new case law that's in place that dictates what we can do and can't do regarding a transient or homeless encampment. We can't simply just take action and arrest somebody for trespassing and then leave their things there. We're actually responsible for it. So those are some of the things that are coming out in case law now. So we're having a meeting tomorrow, and we're putting together a plan with all the partners involved to come up with a comprehensive plan to deal with this as the weather clears and people are inclined to repatriate the areas that we've already cleared out. We're getting a plan in place to make sure we stay as aggressive and proactive as we can to maintain those areas. And it's not just a blight problem. It really is an environmental problem as well, because these people are polluting the streams and the waterways and with trash and everything else. So we're going to stay on top of it, and we're committed to making sure we take care of the problem. So with that, I would entertain any questions that anybody might have.
Thank you. I had one question. The numbers you cited on vehicle stops, et cetera, mm-hmm. is that similar to other months? Is there kind of an average? Or
It's actually probably lower than what an average amount would be, because given the fact it's the winter months, inclement weather, less people out and about and moving around. Typically, you'll see our statistics spike after periods of rain and the weather clears, then everybody wants to get outside and do things, then we have more problems. And along the line of thought, when the weather clears and gets better and more favorable, you have more people out and about, which creates more work for us. It's indicative of a winter month of a January, February.
And then South Station, what range do you cover?
Our South Station covers close to 700 square miles, and that covers everything from Shell Beach all the way to the Santa Maria Riverbed, all of rural Arroyo Grande out to Wasna, Lopez Lake, High Mountain Road, and out 166 to include Sway Creek, Bull Canyon, all the way out there.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a large patrol area, isn't it?
It is. Fortunately, it's sparsely populated in some of those rural areas, so I would say that the bulk of our activity and our patrol resources are spent locally here in Oceano and Napomo. And most of the outlying areas require very little calls for service. So we're able to focus our attention on the highly populated areas.
Does the CHP also patrol 166?
The CHP, the Sheriff's Office has an MOU with the CHP to do traffic enforcement in all the unincorporated areas of the county. They do handle 166. They patrol the roads in Oceano and Napomo and all the rural highways doing traffic enforcement. We do traffic enforcement as well, but their primary function is traffic enforcement and traffic collision investigation. So we have an MOU with them, and they do that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anything else, Elena?
I'm just curious. Yes, how many incidents do you have here in Oceano that are drug-related?
A lot.
Because I know there's an epidemic with it.
The vast majority of our pedestrian contacts, bicycle contacts, even some of our traffic stops nearly always have a drug component to it. Somebody's on probation for drug-related offenses, they're in possession of drugs or drug paraphernalia, they have warrants for their arrest for drug-related offenses. So it's prevalent, it's out there. When they passed Prop 47 and they made a lot of the felonies misdemeanors, really, if somebody's in possession of heroin or cocaine or methamphetamine, we simply write them a ticket instead of taking them to jail. So it's now a misdemeanor instead of a felony. And so now you have the people that normally would be off the street that are committing the thefts and the burglaries and things like that are now on the street more often. So we're seeing a lot more of it as a result of that. So I don't want to scare you. Your community is by and large part, very safe. And our deputies are very proactive in the community on keeping everybody safe and very responsive to the needs of the community. It's just the things that we see every day versus what you hear about. So it's out there. And it's not just in Oceano. It's in Pismo Beach. It's in Arroyo Grande. It's in Grover Beach. It's in the city of San Luis Obispo. It's everywhere. So.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Tony Maricino.
Good evening, Board. Tony Maricino. So I did not speak at the last board meeting, so it's going to have a little higher totals here and there. Lopez is currently at 48.8% full, which is 24,095 acre feet. We had zero SSOs for January. Lopez water year starts April 1st. That's the numbers I'm giving you. So we've had 340 acre feet of Lopez delivered, and we pumped 279 acre feet. As for work orders, we've had 23, 16 USAs, 21 customer service calls. We had five after-hour call-outs. One was due to a tree in the back of our parking lot here. If you notice, that tree's missing. It came down during the winds. And the crew went out there, took care of it. used the backhoe, and actually it was on the fence and almost touching the residence right there, but it impeded their way to get to the front door, and just basically picked it up with the thumb once they delimbed it and the backhoe and brought it over and chopped it up and removed the entire tree. Another call out was for Old Wands. Old Wands was out of water on a weekend. Once the operator showed up, they have a water softener or a filter system. They have not been maintaining these systems, and it'll actually impede the flow of water, where it basically will shut the water off going to their facility because the filters are clogged or it hasn't been serviced or maintained. And this is not uncommon. It happens to other restaurants. It happens to residents also. We've gone to many call-outs where they just don't maintain their filters or their soft water units, ROs, anything that has a filter that'll clog up. Okay, we had some dirty water complaints. And once the operator showed up at a location, it was actually the hot water heater. Another thing, if hot water heaters are not maintained, drained, the hot water will come out dirty. We had a leak on 1610 Pier. It was actually on the customer side. This past weekend, we had a power outage that affected from here, I heard, all the way down to Santa Maria. And our lift station to our boosters, everything, we lost power everywhere. But we did some coordination with Lopez to increase our gallons per minute from turnout to installing an emergency generator at the lift station to a natural gas Waukesha providing pressure to our system. So everything went as good as it could go for a power outage. All right. We had to took the analyzer from well 4 since well 4 is down. We had the analyzer go down at well 8. We actually took that equipment and reinstalled it at well 8. As for the 311 app, we had 9 work orders for January. Just to let you know, February, we've probably had 40. So somebody's the community's picking up on this, and I'll give you the right amounts of stats next month, but we've probably had 30 to 40 of these work orders from 311. Really been busy with that. Meter changeouts, we've been really focusing on that. Everything, the lift station's been complete. It's up and running, all the motors, the seals, everything from when it did get flooded on the drywall. We had to locate some utilities for a private resident that wanted to build on his house. We do a reimbursement agreement. We did that for him. 2300 had a line break, and that was during, well, it was basically leaking. We went over there, scheduled it, and had to replace the line. Same thing, the hose clamps were holding it together. As soon as we started digging it up, it actually blew apart. But got that replaced, backfilled, and right now that's a temporary patch of cold mix. About 3 minutes before we got off work, we had 20th Street. We had a line break over there. Took care of that. That went really well. That's got backfilled. It's cold patched as of right now. We'll wait until we get a few more areas that we can hot mix because that is a county road. Currently still meeting with Pismo Coast Village because they are constructing over there off in Napomo Street, coordination with them. Cleaned up the yard a little bit. Our bar reports and state reports were completed. We had a, Honolulu had a water break, and it was on a Monday when our new employee first started with us, and basically jumped right down the hole and got to it, first day on the job. So he's doing line breaks right off the bat. That went really well. That was actually an angle stop that was manipulated, possibly, and then it broke, so we had to repair it. We helped out with state parks because they had some dirty water complaints, even though we also flushed on pier. We kind of went with them for about an hour just to see how they flush and kind of give them some advice and tips, and, you know, open them up all the way, let it run until it comes clean, because I think they were kind of stirring it up on their own. Way they were doing it. We're really focusing on valve turning so we can get to directional flushing. Once we get the entire system valve turned, identified which valves need to be replaced or stems, take care of that, and this year we'll do a system-wide directional flushing. That's what I'm planning on doing, just because when line breaks do happen, dirty water complaints, or it's real bad just because we've had a drought and we haven't had directional flushing. We do our dead ends, but the system needs to get a directional flush to minimize these dirty water complaints when lines do break. Any questions?
Yeah, on the 311 calls, is that mostly just trash bags, or what kind of stuff is being left?
Refrigerators, couches, clothes, dishwashers, love seats, you name it, it's out there. I think we picked up tires.
And didn't San Luis just raise the prices on the dump fees, I think?
You know, I yeah. really couldn't answer that question. I don't know at this time, but I can find out for you.
No, I think they did. And then I had a question on all the repairs you do in the wells. That's all in-house?
Everything on here that is, yes, it's except for the lift station. We did get the electrician to come in.
Okay.
We're not too good of electricians, I'll be honest with you. And it's 480. Yes, but pretty much everything else we do
okay.
in-house.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
We don't object to you calling the electrician for 480. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Steve Lieberman is not able to be here tonight, and I thought I'd give a quick report on the Rio Grande City Council meeting of last night. The council deliberated. The Rio Grande City Council deliberated last night for about 5 hours and failed to make any firm decisions on funding the Five Cities Fire Authority, which was the topic of the meeting. A major theme was a concern that Oceana would be unable to fund its share of costs for the next fiscal year. The council proposed an ad hoc committee with the Rio Grande, Grover Beach, and Oceana and the County of San Luis Obispo to urge the county to support Oceana, increase support, or add some support to Oceana for fire. This ad hoc meeting is going to come before the next AG Council meeting on March 5th. At that time, Rio Grande Council members will decide to extend the debate over the present memorandum of agreement for the next 3 months, or form an independent fire department, or work with Grover to reform the Five Cities Fire Authority without Oceano. A new funding formula is being considered, with AG paying 44%, Grover 33%, and Oceano 23%. And while this is all going on, we're kind of just waiting, because both the Rio Grande and Grover are two parties in the Five Cities Fire Authority, and Grover will meet next Monday. They need to decide how they feel about the funding formula before Oceano can go ahead, but Oceano is not sitting still. We're exploring many options, as we have since a year ago January, when we asked Grover and Oceano and Rio Grande to join us in forming an ad hoc committee. They didn't then, but they're doing it now. And the OCSD is continuing to negotiate for the continuation of the Five Cities Fire Authority, but we're also looking at other actions that we could or would need to take. The board has been and will continue to do its utmost to provide the best possible fire and emergency medical service for the community. The Oceana Volunteer Fire Department was formed to serve the community in the 1950s and later morphed into the OCSD. This historical note is not lost on this board. And a Rio Grande Council person Tuesday night called the issue of fire funding a difficult conversation. I certainly agree. And if there's any questions, or if the board have any questions, this is just a real short action thing.
And my understanding, Director Gibson, is that you were there as well as President Austin.
Yes,
and
as observers, yes, we were.
I don't know if you have any other follow-up.
I think she covered the essentials.
So my sort of only thought right now is that not knowing the timing of the interagency meetings, the question is which board representatives are going to attend with me. If it's, you know, again, we recommended elected official meetings concurrent with the manager's meetings over a year ago. And part of that recommendation was based on certainly the managers needed to do a lot of homework, but as long as if the concurrently the elected officials are dialoguing, then a lot of questions and issues would be addressed, and maybe a five-hour meeting last night would have been only a three-hour meeting. I don't know. And so, you know, as a minority, you know, a non-quorum of your board, you know, Vice President White and Director Villa are sort of eliminated from attending the meeting since you represent the districts at Five Cities Fire Authority. I'm anticipating that both of the mayors are going to attend the meetings, Jeff Lee with Grover and Karen Ray with Arroyo Grande. And my thoughts are, you know, our president, even though she's not here today, was at the meeting last night. And then, of course, Director Gibson, both you were at the meeting last night, but you also have served on committees for Arroyo Grande and have some existing relationships there. And no formal action is required of your board since it's not a majority of, you know, not a quorum going over there. But that's my general recommendation on getting together with the mayors and the county is that it would be President Austin and Director Gibson.
Yeah, Wade Horton from the county indicated that it would be Bruce Gibson and
John Pashon.
John Pashon, yeah. Who are the county's ad hoc fire they were on the committee that did the county report,
yeah.
Or something like that. And he suggested that the meeting could even be held on the weekend or after hours.
Yeah. And so just a couple of my follow-up comments on it, and, you know, maybe this is a little bit of transition into the general manager's report. But certainly we have been meeting with the county. The managers and I have met with Wade Horton. After the last Five Cities Fire Authority meeting, we went and had an impromptu meeting with supervisors Adam Hill and Lynn Compton and, you know, had discussions with them. I believe that the county is fully engaged. And one of the reasons why the county is engaged right now is simply that last year when the county was considering the dissolution of the Cayucas Fire Protection District and had hearings on it, Oceano attended those meetings at the County Board of Supervisors and recommended, at that time, a Blue Ribbon Committee to address fire services throughout the unincorporated community, because it's not just Cayucas and Oceano, it's also San Miguel and Santa Maria and the other unincorporated. At that meeting of the Board of Supervisors, they concurred with a Blue Ribbon Committee. After that meeting, it morphed a little bit, and instead it went into a component of the county's strategic plan, which included findings but no recommendations. So I do have a certain level of cautious optimism in terms of the county's engagement right now. The county really doesn't subsidize any programs of CSDs, but fire and emergency services is a big issue, not just in Oceano but in other unincorporated communities. And we were able to compel the county to do the report that they did and the component of the strategic plan. And, you know, I think it's a good follow-up and everything. And it's, you know, still have to see how it goes and everything. But I think it's some of the best hopes that we have of the continuation of Five Cities Fire Authority. My thought is also that with Grover meeting next week, and then I believe the next Arroyo Grande City Council meeting
next
is on the 12th. Your next meeting is on the 13th, and I won't have, obviously, time to develop a staff report on the results of those two meetings. So right now I'm targeting the meeting of the 27th of March for coming back to your board. Technically, if there's an extension of the negotiation period, I'm already authorized to approve an extension under the MOA, the Memorandum of Agreement. But again, coming back on the 27th would be a good opportunity to provide an update to the board on both of the deliberations of the two cities. And if we have, it's my opinion that the extension of discussions is very important right now. If the two cities agree, then I'll use the authority that's already been granted by your board to follow through and make sure that we can continue the discussions. And again, if that's prior to the 27th, it will be part of reporting back to your board on the 27th. Transitioning into my report then, with regard to the place, we did meet with Supervisor Compton, and the county has followed up with a lot of guidance on what would be necessary to use the old fire station for other purposes. I need to transmit that to Wes Bonheim, who's representing the place. I've been working with the district engineer on getting our Highway 1, the drainage project relocation, you know, our relocation projects ready to go out to bid. The county is going out to bid on the bigger project this week. It might already be posted. They usually have about a month-long bidding process. Since our work is a much smaller component of that, our bidding minimum is 2 weeks. So we're going to, you know, make sure to get those bids out in time and hopefully give contractors more than 2 weeks. But the contracting industry is already going to be alerted to the project with the county's bid, and our documents are going to be consistent. Again, similar to the Air Park Drive project, that the bridge replacement project that the county implemented, we also had to do some of our utility relocations, and we did concurrent bidding. As it turned out there, the bids were relatively high, and we figured we could self-perform, which is allowable under the public contracts code. With Tony and the crews implementing that project, we were actually able to save considerable money, probably upwards of about $100,000. On the drainage project relocations, we don't envision ourselves being able to self-perform on that one, in part because we're going to be in Caltrans right-of-way. There's going to be a lot of traffic. And the contrast was on the bridge project, it was all a closed, you know, a closed site to no traffic and everything. And the construction was, you know, more consistent with the work that the crews already do. The utility relocations on the drainage project are going to be somewhat more complicated with really tight tolerances vertically. So much more comfortable with contractors doing that. But again, by doing concurrent bids, our project is included in the county bids, and then we concurrently go out to bid in order to have the two bid processes seek the best price that we can for the community. The also met with Cannon since the both in following up on the low impact of development projects. With respect to the one on Warner Street, Director Villa, you'll be getting an invitation to participate in some of the, you know, public discussions on that particular project. When we come back to formal decision making from your board, that's probably a good example of one where you'll have to step down and not participate as a board member because of the close proximity to your home and the nature of the project. But again, we can make sure to communicate prior to that coming back for formal action. But it's where you get to sort of sit as a committee, as a community member, and not as a board member. The upcoming Integrated Regional Water Management grants, which we're going to be targeting for our line replacement projects, is those grant applications are going to be due either March 21st or March 28th. And I anticipate getting the information from the county this Friday, hopefully. And so we're just going to, we already know what we're supposed to do, and we'll fill out the grant applications and get that rolling. And that's a committee at the Regional Water Management Group that Director Gibson is on for part of the grant application review and ranking within the on the regional basis. And then I just wanted to follow up on Tony's comments regarding the 311 app, which has gotten really popular. It's great news. And really the level of work that they did last week, because it wasn't just picking up some stuff. We ordered one of those really large roll-off boxes, you know, the big size roll-off boxes, and they filled it. I mean, it was over the top filled. There was a lot of stuff that they cleaned up, and so I think that diligence is just something that we're going to have to continue to work on. But the 311 app, we implemented it well over a year ago, the 311 app, And the idea is people are getting to know it, and we're really starting to get a lot of good activity on it. So I want to encourage the community to keep sending us the information. And lastly, we did get the we have received the information from the county on the timing of both the March primary as well as the November general elections next year, and the timing of calling for ballot items. So our basic deadline, if we end up, if your board ends up calling for a Prop 218 election next March for Five Cities Fire Authority, that deadline to call for the election is October 22nd. As Vice President White had indicated, Arroyo Grande is considering also an extension of the negotiations. Under the MOA, those negotiations can be extended as far as October 1st. So overall, the timing is good. You know, we'd have to be concurrently preparing some of the documents in order to call for the election. But again, the negotiations in the existing MOA, Memorandum of Agreement, are anticipated to go as far as October 1st, and October 22nd is the day then that's the deadline for your board to call for an election. And with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Is there any update on the RFP for using the district's hours at the community center?
No.
Is that still?
Still on our to-do list?
Yeah.
Yes.
Because I thought it was going to be done the beginning of this year.
Yeah, we just have to try to work that one in. You know, my priority right now is I've got to get these two bid documents out. The one that is for the Highway 1, well, actually three bid documents, the generator project, the relocations on Highway 1, and then the other item that's on the agenda today. So that's going to take a couple more weeks still. And then, so I would suggest call me on March 21st and say, are you working on it yet?
Okay.
Because those reminders are always good.
I'll put that on my calendar.
Yes.
We would have a board election on November next year, right?
Yes.
Okay.
One, two. I think we have two director positions that would be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just double checking that I was not somewhere else. That concludes our reports. Move on to Board of Directors and Outside Committee reports. Director Villa. Your name is first on the list.
Okay. I attended the Five Cities Fire Authority on February 7th, along with some of you here also. And I was pleased to see some of our representatives there from the county. Who was there? Compton and Hill. I was going to say Gibson. And I'm, you know, I also was very happy to hear that a lot of people want to keep Grover Beach, Rio Grande, they want to keep us together. So I'm hopeful that that's going to happen, and I don't really want to be left out and have the county step in. So it seems like most of the people there knew that disrupting it or absolving it would not be a good thing, and I'm very optimistic that in the end, we will be able to keep it, even if it does increase our taxes. I personally would like to see it stay the way it is, because I know it's very effective. I've used it, like I've said it time and time again. It's like the response is like immediate. It seems like in 3 minutes they're at my house. So I would like to keep it as is, and I know that we're such a small community that we could just act like we're a medium-sized town, right? So I'm going to do my best to do my part, talk to my neighbors and stuff to, you know, vote for it, and hopefully we can keep it.
And if I might follow up really quickly, you know, in terms of our next steps with the other communities, we still have some work to do. But we're also anticipating in March where legal counsel will provide an overview of the do's and don'ts of what we can do, you know, underneath the government code. One of the primary things that's really important is that we're not allowed to use any district money to advocate for or against a ballot item. Your board's allowed to take a position in terms of, like we see in ballot measures, you can take a position for, but there's some rules of do's and don'ts that we want to make sure to discuss in March. And it's that primarily revolves around no use of public money to advocate. We're allowed to put out information, factual information, but we can't... we can't as a district, and for public money, this is distinguished from what you can do as individual members of the district, as directors, but in terms of public money, you know, we can't send out anything that says vote yes, or, you know, can't send out anything.
So it's even more important to word of mouth and letting everyone know how important it is and how, you know, I'm sure certain community members have been here for a while in Oceano know what an awesome job they do.
Director Gibson?
Nothing to report.
I have nothing more. Director Rapoglou? I bet you've been busy.
Yeah, I went to a bunch of meetings. The RWMG meeting and RAC meeting were on the 6th, and the RWMG Regional Water Management Group, they talked about the Stormwater Resources Plan update. They submitted a draft back in November, got comments back in January, and then are going to resubmit it to the Regional Water Board, I think. I'm trying to read my chicken scratch here, tomorrow. And they also talked about the key facts and dates for Prop 1 IRWM implementation grants, the round one. The RWMG is in the process in March and April of selecting the projects that are going to be submitted. And then on the RAC meeting, let's see. So water conservation submittee recommendations were reviewed. And they have been sent to the Board of Supervisors. You're going to ask to put that on the public agenda, not the consent agenda. I don't know. I mean, this was early this month. I don't know if that's come up yet or not at the Board of Supervisors. And then they talked about having members of the RAC provide updates on the water issues in their areas once a year on a rotating schedule. So I think that's TBD. Then I also attended the Oceano Advisory Council meeting last Thursday, which was a short meeting because the power went off in here. but we talked about, I gave a report from code enforcement. Mason wasn't able to attend the meeting, but he sent some email comments. One bit of good news is that drainage basin on, I think it's 25th and Laura Lane, has been completely cleared of all the big chunks of concrete that were dumped in there. He's still working on the recycling center over here that was supposed to put in landscaping to block the view from Front Street, but they've just got four sad little Charlie Brown Christmas trees. And it's also pointed out by Charles that the lot is starting to fill up with more just U-Haul trailers and trailers full of trash bags and stuff there now, too, which I don't think is in conformance with their permit. So I pass those comments on to Mason. And he seems to be pretty responsive, so we're hopeful that he's going to keep on top of things. That's all I have.
Thank you. Call for public comment on the staff reports. Seeing no one come forward, move on to consent agenda items. And call for public comment again. come forward, we'll approach. How am I doing? Do we have any action on the consent agenda items? Any questions, any comments?
No.
Entertain a motion then.
I make a motion that we approve the consent agenda items A and B.
Second.
It's been moved by Director Gibson, seconded by Director Villa. Call for a roll call.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
Director Apolpin?
Yes.
Vice President?
Yes. Moving on to business items, A, B, C, D, and E. Again, call for public comment. If anyone has a public comment on any of the items on the business side of the agenda. Nobody come forward. Moving on to business item A, consideration of recommendations to approve a grant agreement for phase two of the Water Resource Reliability Program, and direct the board president to execute and to approve a related budget adjustment in the amount of $177,750. Mr. Ogren?
Yeah, Vice President White, members of the board, and members of the public. Actually, all of our items A, B, C, D, and E will be pretty quick staff presentations, verbal statements that really are going to be nothing, you know, the written staff report also cover all of our comments. In terms of this is the grant that's in front of you for $177,750 is something that we were awarded about 2 years ago. It's just that the Department of Water Resources has had a lot of grants that they're pushing out associated with Proposition 1, so we have finally gotten the actual grant agreement. And as noted in the staff report and previously reported to your board, we're also going to be free up some of our Proposition 84 money to move into design work. So we have an estimated about $250,000 in grant funding to do design on our waterline replacement projects. And I met with Cannon again this last week. We'll be doing a presentation to your board in the very near future on those projects, the list of projects that we have, what the construction cost estimates are. But again, good news that we're going to be able to move from the preliminary engineering that's been worked on and has been funded by grants and into, you know, design work that's going to be funded by grants as well. And be glad to answer any questions.
Well done. We're actually going to find places to put pipes and then put them in the ground. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I'm hopeful that the timing of where we're at on this is going to, you know, be able to lead to some of the implementation grant funding as well.
Moving on to item B.
But we do need a couple of these are just receiving file. This one is for approval of staff recommendations.
I make a motion we approve staff recommendations.
Second.
It's been moved by Director White, seconded by Director Villa. Roll call, please.
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Apolpin?
Yes.
Mr. Minery, do I need to say it passed 4-0 with one absent? Do I need to announce the?
The bylaws would suggest that you do that. Yes.
Yes, I'm sorry. Please. Yes, it passes 4-0 with one absent. Moving on to item B, consideration of recommendation to authorize the general manager to solicit bids to replace the water main of North Swing and Pershing in accordance with the district ordinance 2016-1 contract documents and the attached encroachment permit issued by the County of San Luis Obispo, and to file a notice of exemption pursuant to the California Environmental Quality Act with the San Luis Obispo County Recorder submittal of a sewer system management plan SSMP 2019 internal audit covering calendar year 2017 and 2018.
I think you might have blended B and C together there, but we blended B and C together in our agenda description.
Yeah, I was wondering where I was going when I was reading that and went, wait a minute.
So this is specifically then the consideration of the North Swing and Pershing line replacement projects. That's the where we have a 2-inch galvanized water line that's currently leaking, and you can see it bubbling up a little bit. And so we obtained the county's encroachment permit, which is necessary so that we can get into the road and replace the project. It is exempt from CEQA. We've also had contacts with county planning department because it's exempt from the coastal development permit as well as a basically a routine maintenance type of a replacement project. And so the intent is to get this out to bid in the next couple of weeks so that we can get it constructed and replaced. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Is that why it's exempt from CEQA too, because it's routine maintenance? Or
yes. Yeah.
And you only need two bids? Is this the one?
Pardon me?
Two bids are necessary?
So what we do under the informal bidding procedures, under the Uniform Construction Cost Accounting Act, UCAC, of which I sit on the UCAC Commission. stop it. It's really up to the private contractors as to how many bids we receive. Oh. We have to post it on the electronic bulletin boards. The nice thing about these small projects is that the details that are included in the county's encroachment permit is really all the details that we have to include in the bid documents. Mm-hmm. So we don't have to over-design it. If we get no bids, then we're allowed to then proceed with essentially negotiating with any contractor to do the work or to do the work in-house ourselves. I would not anticipate we would do this type of work in-house. It's the perfect type of a project for small local contractors, though, to bid on.
Do we have any timetable into when they're going to pave that road? When the county's going to?
Oh, yes. The update was that they were talking about deferring it until 2020. Now they're looking at, they think that they can do the overlay projects this fall, late summer this fall. So we certainly can get our work done before they go in and do their work. And depending on the specific timing, right now what we have to assume is that the contractor is going to have to do what's called a T-patch, where you go and you do your trench work, and then you have to put the, you know, hot mix and do all that type of work. But if we can, you know, if we can time it close enough to the county's ability to do their overlay project, then we might be able to save a little bit more money on asphalt.
At least we're getting it in before the road is fixed.
Yes, that's pretty critical. Otherwise, if we don't get it in before the road is fixed, then we have to repave the road.
Yeah.
So.
And nothing makes the community angrier than to seeing somebody tear up a new road. Okay.
So, again, the recommendations are to approve staff recommendations.
So moved.
Second. Moved by Director Gibson, seconded by Director Rapoglou. Call for a roll call.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Rapoglou?
Yes.
Vice President Villa?
Yes. Villa, Vice President.
Sorry, Director Villa?
Yes.
Got a promotion.
President White.
She can have my job. Yes, it passes 4-0, 1 absent. Thank you. Want to see, which I read part of, sees the middle of the Sewer System Management Plan 2019 internal audit covering calendar years 2017-2018.
So we have a real quickly, if I need any help with questions, then Casey's certainly here to help. Casey did a lot of this work. He's in charge of the Sewer System Management Plan. A lot of that work is line flushing every year. That also includes other components like inspections of the food establishments for fats, oils, and greases. In 2017, we had South County Sanitation District staff was doing what we call the fog inspections. In 2018, the individual who's working for the sanitation district found employment elsewhere. So in 2018, one of the local firms that does fog inspections for a lot of communities did it for us, and right now they're training us on how to do it ourselves.
What is that local firm?
Wallace.
Part of the Wallace Group?
Wallace Group, yeah.
Wallace?
Yeah.
I wasn't here when all that stuff was going down with John Wallace, but from what I gather, he's kind of a bad actor, so why are we
dealing
with that?
I'm certainly not going to.
There's got to be other firms.
Well, I'm not going to characterize the firm as being a bad actor, and I'm really going to refrain from, having OCSD. We had a public comment a couple weeks ago that said that they should be black, and I'm really going to refrain from suggesting that, this district or the board do so. The idea that, they're doing the inspection for some of the other local communities right here in South County is, and they know it, they know the sand district ordinances that we implement, and they're available to provide the services within my purchasing authority, and so that's the action I took. What we're doing is having them train us right now so that we can take over the inspections ourselves. And I do appreciate their responsiveness to us since the sanitation district was no longer able to provide those services.
But is there another firm that we could use instead of them?
Well, we will not be using any more firms because we're taking it in-house. We're getting the final training.
But for the training?
No, because they're the ones who know the sand district ordinance that we have to comply with. They're the ones who have done the services, and I've already issued the purchase order for them to do the training. And so that decision has already been made.
Could we continue, Mr. Ogren?
Yes. So the item in front of you today, which is really a receive and file on an internal report, is that underneath the sewer system management plan, the plan is actually updated formally every 5 years. The last time was in 2015, so next year in 2020, it's going to be updated again. In the meanwhile, we do an every other year audit, and then we submit that audit to the Regional Water Board. The basic findings that we've had this time is that our administrative files, since the sanitation district was doing the permitting for fog, they had some of the permits. We need to make sure to get those in our administrative files, and in fact, we'll be issuing new permits to all the food service establishments this year. And that was the primary item. Tony has, we report on sewer system overflows. The only one that led to a discharge to a surface water body during the two-year period was the overflow that was caused by Granite Construction as part of the Airport Drive Bridge Replacement Project, where they broke one of our sewer mains. We responded to the regulatory agencies on that incident. The regulatory agencies, their follow-up action was not with us, but was with Granite Construction. So for the two-year period, again, the implementation of the SSMP has been going really well. The line flushings and the other work that our crews have been doing, they've been doing consistently, and they know it very well. And on the fog inspections for the food service establishments, that's the one thing that we are transitioning into our staff. And in the grand scheme of things, since Oceano doesn't have a lot of food service establishments, again, that's not a big component of the sewer system management plan and one that we felt comfortable bringing it in-house. And with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Yeah, I was curious at how many restaurants and food establishments that there is. About a dozen, isn't there?
Yeah, Casey is. Come on.
Mr. Stewart? And maybe.
We have 17 total.
17 total?
Yes.
And maybe you could explain to somebody just real briefly what we're talking about, because when you say fog, I know, but a lot of people don't.
So we're talking about fats, oils, and grease, just stuff we want to avoid going down the drain and causing problems downstream for both us and for the wastewater plant. It's just best management practices and then the implementation of, grease interceptors and traps inside restaurants.
And did they pump it out, or did they don't send it into the sewer, right?
No, they don't. Everybody's on sort of, and I'm still learning it, so I'm still new with the whole implementation with the restaurants. But yeah, everybody's on kind of a different schedule, just based on their generation of fog. But there are requirements that no matter how little you generate, that you get it pumped out every 90 days. So. And that's a private grease handler that comes in and deals with that.
Okay. Anybody else have any questions? Mr. Stewart?
Yeah, I had a question. Kind of a dumb question, but
no.
Do you have to go down into the sewers, you know, when you're doing your work? Or?
No, primarily everything we do is from above ground, with the flushing and the jetting. Okay. and with the fog program. We 9.5 times out of 10 stay above ground.
Okay. And then are you a big part of doing all this documentation?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. It's pretty extensive.
Yeah. It's a lot to keep track of.
Yeah.
Yeah, Casey is. He's leading on this program work, so all compliments to go to Casey on this work effort.
I remember when I first got on the board, I think Mr. Ogren was... One of the first projects undertaken was the SSMP, and we were totally out of alignment with the legal requirements for it. And I remember that you engaged the whole staff and wrote a whole new document to replace one that I think had cost, we had a consultant write it for about $30,000-$40,000. So that's just a little savings, and with our staff doing it, they write it so they know what it says, and they're very able to meet all the it's a whole pile of rules and regulations, and they're able to meet it all. Anyway, and I thank you all.
So we don't think there's any zombies in the sewer?
Nope, if there were, we'd find them.
Okay. Thank you.
I had a few questions that came up when I was reading through the audit. So on page 108 of 149, 2A2 says, are procedures established to comply with SMMP? It says, staff needs to remember to update phone numbers and individual names as changes occur. To me, that's not a process. So could that become part of the onboarding of new, when there's a new board member or other staff that needs to be added to the contact list? Procedural, then they need to remember it.
Yeah, that's simply what we need. If we have a phone number change, we have changes in elected officials or some of the critical staff, we just simply have to remember, and Casey's got to remember, we got to update.
Well, it could be part of a procedure. When you get a new board member, you update this contact info and the SMMP. So I think I've been on the board for like 6 months now, but I got the idea reading through this, and I'm haven't been added to the contact list.
Right.
So you'll make it part of the process?
Yes. Okay. That's what.
Then on page 111, I was talking about the map. If I wanted to see the map, where is that available? Maybe so a little farther down, page 112, it says that they're going to be made electronic at some point. But
so the map itself is part of the sewer system management plan, and I believe that's on the website, but we can make sure to get you the link to the overall SSMP.
Okay. I'm just curious. Also on page 111, it talks about manholes. I was wondering if we could use more gender-inclusive language there, like maintenance hole or access hole.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just the industry term, really, on manholes.
Yeah, well, in the course of my research, I found there are a number of cities that have gone to
a different term.
Yes.
Maintenance port, maybe. I don't know what the other ones are, but
I think everyone knows what a manhole is.
Yeah.
Some people like I'm not saying people don't know what it is. I'm saying that it's not gender inclusive.
Well,
it makes it seem like only men are going to go down there, like it's a job for a man, not any person.
I wouldn't want it.
So on page 119, it talks about CIP. What is CIP?
Capital Improvement Program.
Oh, okay. See, on 124, let me scroll down here. There are a few things on here that were just unclear to me. Like 2A1, does the district maintain up-to-date information about its public outreach activities? Yes, information is provided to FOG customers and any overflows from private property.
So what happens is that if we, for example, our most common sewer system overflow is on a private property where their own lateral clogs up. And it's not uncommon for that to be a result of fats and greases coming out of the property. And so when we have those incidences, the crews will provide the property owner with some of our public information on, you know, the idea, don't flush grease down your sewer line and that kind of information.
Okay, maybe it's just a rewording issue, that the information is provided to the property owners for overflows from private property.
Yeah, so the FOG customers are, that's specifically really the food service establishments. So we could switch FOG out to be food service establishments.
Okay. And then 2A3, it says, does the district effectively communicate?
Kate?
I think it should be communicate with the public and other agencies about the SSMP and address feedback. And then it just says SSMP updates provided to the regional board. So I expect that updates are also provided to the public. And that's what the question is asking about the public and other agencies
and
not
so
just the regional board.
Right. And so while the regional board is our primary one and the sanitation district had been previously implementing the project for us, so they already knew. As we move forward in our own implementation, if we have issues, then we need to inform the sanitation district. In the grand scheme of things, this isn't the type of industrial activity that really affects the sanitation district. In other communities where they have a lot of industrial waste or, our waste product is just predominantly residential. So if you can imagine other communities where they either have industrial waste or a lot of exposure to fats and greases, then the coordination with, if there's an independent treatment like we have here, would be a more important. But with that said, since the sanitation district's not doing FOG inspections anymore, it's a good note to make sure that we do inform them if we have violations. With respect to the public in general, that's why every report that Tony provides, he identifies whether there are any sewer system overflows and our response to it at each meeting, as well as any other updates with respect to the SSMP.
Okay, so maybe that just needs to be filled out a little more. And then 2B, findings did not post to the web other than on the agenda items. I don't understand what that comment means.
It just simply means, well, this internal audit will get posted, but we don't post, other than what Tony provides, what might get into the minutes, we don't post any of the other event. You know, if we had a significant sewer system overflow, that would get posted to the website. And part of the reason why we're really not actively posting anything to the website is because nothing's really happening.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's all I had. Thank you.
I have a question or two.
you wait for this to happen before you tell the customers? You don't, like, send things out?
No, in terms of the FOG program itself, all of the food service establishments have the information on what they're supposed to do. In fact, what we do is we encourage them to maintain a binder on when they are having their grease traps cleaned and whether they have to get pumped. That way, when the inspection is done, they can show us their binder. So the ongoing communication is really with the target audience, and the target audience is the food service establishments. What we separately want to do is to develop general information on a number of different topics for our water customers and get that on the website. For example, we still have customers that will go in and start turning the valves on our meters, and they're not supposed to touch them. Most people know that, you know, if it's a PG&E meter or a gas meter or something like that, you really got to call the utility before you start playing with it. But we still have occasionally somebody that will come in and start, you know, messing with our meter, and we've had one that caused a line break. So what our goal is not just for the general residential customers, is not just about fats, oils, and greases, because that tends to not be a very common, but the different things that we want them to pay attention to on the water and sewer system. The variety of things like, you know, don't break the meter, don't send greases down your sewer line, verify if you have a clean out, have backflow preventers on your hoses so that water doesn't get sucked from the hose and into the drinking water supply. Have a valve at the house so that the water lateral that comes from the street and feeds into your house, each private property should have their own valve, because then if they have to turn off the water, they turn their valve and they don't mess with the meters and stuff. So in terms of the public outreach on the SSMP, the target audience is the food service establishments. And in terms of the residential customers, what we're really setting up is to do like the helpful hints or the tips on a variety of things that residents and property owners should really be knowledgeable about the water and sewer system. And sewer system and the FOG is just one component of that overall public information tip sheet.
I don't know if I've overlooked them through the years, but have you been sending them out?
No. That's what we were saying, that what our internal discussions on doing that are not just about the SSMP, but on the broader range of like the 6 or 7 or 8, you know, top 10 things that, you know, residents should know about their water and sewer system. And so we've just started to work on that.
Hopefully you'll do it in Spanish, because...
We will. Yeah. And in fact, that tip kind of came from, I was talking with KSBY about, you know, Tony had previously mentioned when we have a line break,
yes.
And it picks up sediments in the system, and then it causes brown water, right?
Exactly.
And so
I'm like 52, and I just like realized how important that is maybe like 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And I'm bilingual, and I'm like, I guess I never paid attention, or it wasn't something that was really emphasized. So I don't, you know, I didn't dump tons of oil or grease or anything down my drain, but now I'm like paranoid. It's like I get a paper towel and
Well, yeah. And what some people do is they'll want to load up the detergent, right? Turn on the hot water if you got grease that you're trying to flush out. Use the Ajax or whatever that, you know, can bleach is. Throw it in there, because that'll thin out the grease, and they'll flush it down the line that way so it doesn't clog up. And the idea is, no, you're not supposed to do that either. And, in fact, in food service establishments, that's strictly prohibited. So one of the things that during an inspection is that there are products out there that people will sell to food service establishments that will thin the greases out to get to help them to flow and get out in the sewer system. And so part of the inspection is to look out for those types of devices, because they're strictly prohibited for food service establishments. And so that's part of the tips, right, is to, no, we don't want you to flush the grease down. If anything, if you have a little glass mason jar and you fill those up, put the cap on it, put it in the trash can and dispose of it that way.
Very quickly, our current fog door hanger is bilingual. It's English on the front, Spanish on the back.
Okay. Sorry, I did have one more thing. Also on page 124 in the table at the top, it says, the enrollee shall create a plan of communication with systems that are tributary and or satellite to the enrollee's sanitary sewer system. Should current finding, should that be a C for compliant instead of NA? Because what about the sanitation district? Isn't that?
Well, so they were part of this audit period. That question was, were prior audit, the prior audit findings were NA because there weren't any. Yeah, the current, I'd actually move the current to R for recommendations since we want to make sure to add the sand district since they won't be doing the inspections anymore.
Okay, thank you. Now I'm really done.
Okay. I got a quick question for Director Rapoglou.
Yeah.
The manhole reference, can you give me the cities or the agencies that have changed the name so I could contact them and get some ideas?
I kind of think one of them might have been Berkeley, but I just Googled it.
Yeah.
And
if you can just give me a point of contact,
sure.
Just so I can somewhere to start.
Yeah, sure.
That's it. Thank you.
So this document, again, was a receive and file, and I have some notes. We'll make a couple edits to it as discussed and then send it on to the regional board.
Thank you. Item B, consideration of a recommendation to review the 2019-2020 proposed Zone 3 budget and provide the Zone 3 committee representatives with direction as deemed appropriate.
President White, members of the board, item D, we have the Zone 3 budget. This is the water supply for Lopez. This budget is prepared by the county. It's presented to the Zone 3 advisory committee and the technical advisory committee. And the increase, the major one for the percentage of increase for 18-19 was 2.9% for the district. The majority of the increases came from non-routine operations and capital outlay projects. The item of significance would be the cloud seeding program that will be considered by the Board of Supervisors next month, and the total allocated for that project for the 19-20 budget will be $300,000 total, so that's only $20,000 for this district. And that basically concludes my summary, unless someone has a line item that I can look at. I just want to say I think that spending money on cloud seeding is a waste of money. We're completely out of drought right now, for one thing, and for another thing, the reading I've done, the science is not conclusive that this works or that it will produce the intended effects. So it's kind of a little bit like black magic sort of thing, and I don't think it's a wise use of funds.
So Director Gibson, I think that there has been discussion at Zone 3, and there's been a variety of opinions on Zone 3 as well.
Right.
Some that reflect Director Rapoglou's position as well.
Right. And we had numerous discussions, and in the end, it was, as I remember, unanimous vote.
So my thought on follow-up discussions with Zone 3, because this is a pretty productive rain year, mm-hmm. And we do see the lake level going up. Is to, you know, have some discussion for Zone 3 to follow up, you know, in the fall. And my thinking is simply that based on, you know, the timing of being able to approve whatever the Board of Supervisors has to approve and then being able to line up a contractor and be ready if the group wants it done next year, that, you know, the Board of Supervisors has to take action relatively soon. But we're already seeing the lake come up, and I watched the increase in storage graphs pretty carefully. And there's a bit of a tip that people can see on that, because normally, I'll use my finger, but what we'll see in Lopez is during a rainfall event, we see, you know, the lake level come up, and as soon as it stops raining, it levels off flat. When the watershed is really soaked and it's becoming productive, we don't see it flatten off. Even after rainfall events, we still see the reservoir levels increasing. And so for the first time in a long time, we finally started seeing that in January. And that tells us that, you know, the rain that we continue to get this year, and hopefully, you know, March can often be a very productive month, we're going to, the reservoir and the watershed is really primed to increase the levels of water and storage based on whatever rain we get right now. The watershed is really saturated. The likelihood of us getting into the low reservoir response plan is almost zero right now, because the trigger is, are we going to be under 20,000 acre feet of storage on June 1st? And with what we've seen and what we know about how much we pull out of that reservoir between, you know, now and June 1st, the likelihood of the low reservoir response plan being triggered is very, very low. And so I think it is noteworthy that Zone 3, even though they've supported it, you know, logistically and before we started getting a lot of these rains and before we really know what's happening, it does look like it's going to be a pretty productive year. And if the reservoir levels come, you know, continue to increase, you know, I think there is a pretty good question as to whether or not it would be a wise decision for next winter. So, you know, the group has taken their action of making sure that it's set up, but I think that a fall decision to, you know, look at it again and whether or not they really want to pull the trigger would be a good point of discussion that you could bring forward to the committee.
Yeah, I would agree.
You know, that's kind of informal direction. Again, no action is required on this. I think the county overall is doing a good job of trying to keep the cost increases within, you know, the basic increases that we're seeing in inflation.
I did have one other question on page 143. There's a Oceano Community Services District loan for $41,577. What is that?
Let's see, on 143? And on our line, our column for OCSD, are we looking?
Page 143 of 149.
Yes. For $41,577?
Yes.
Do you want me to explain that? You want to? Close. It has to do with the GEO bond above it. So the two different bond issues, Carrie's right in terms of the reason why we're uniquely treated there. There's two different bond issuances for Lopez, the Lopez project. On the top portion, the bond debt service that includes GEO debt service, installment debt service, and then ultimately the district loan to Oceano, that was the debt that was used to fund the seismic remediation project when we had to rebuild Lopez. The state revolving fund loan program is what was used to fund the upgrades to the water treatment plant. So on the bonded indebtedness associated with the seismic remediation project, when the county went to refinance, or, you know, on homes we call it refinancing, on municipal debt it's called refunding. The distinction is that when we issue municipal debt, if you had an original, like, 30-year term, we're generally prohibited from extending that out further. So if we have 20 years left, we still only have 20 years. Versus at a home, if, you know, if you've gone 15 years and you refinance your house, you can refinance it for another 30. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of a detail there. We call it refunding of municipal debt rather than refinancing it. But when the county went to take advantage of the lower interest rates, and this is Carrie's point, the district had been violating the covenants associated with the debt service. The primary covenant is that the district had not had its water rates sufficiently high. So when you issue debt on a water system, usually the municipal markets say that your revenue flow has to be 125% of your operating cost and your debt service cost. And the idea is that extra 25% is what we rely on for our capital improvement program. But the district's rates at the time had really not even been covering all their costs, right? The district wasn't complying with the conditions of the debt, and in the refunding efforts, the district was going to push up the interest rate, right? And so the district is excluded from the refunding. And essentially what the county did through Zone 3 is paid off the district's debt so that the refunding could happen. And then the flood control district, covered Oceano's share, and Oceano pays the flood control district at the rate of the original bonds. Because Oceano was going to compromise the interest rate. The other agencies got the advantage of the lower interest rate. The county paid off Oceano's debt, and then we pay the county at the interest rate that was the original bond issuance.
So when did all this happen?
That happened probably 10 years ago. It was a while ago.
Thank you. It's an interesting backstory.
Yeah. Well, I remember it well because I was on the other side of the table trying to figure out how to make this happen. And that was the way that, you know, and the good thing is Oceano's, our participation in the Lopez project is 6.69%. So the flood control zone 3 reserves were sufficient to pay off our portion of the debt. If it had been, one of the larger agencies, I don't think the flood control district could have been able to do it. But it was a little bit of a creative solution in order to help, with the refunding efforts.
Thank you.
And that's just a report.
Yes.
Yeah. 8E, receive and file the June 30th, 2018 audited financial statement and independent audits report presented by Moss Levy and Hasheim, LLP.
President White, members of the board, item 9E, we have your 2018, so June 30th, 2018 audited financials. This has been the second year where there's been no findings related to the district's internal controls. This is the third year we've included the management discussion analysis, and this is prepared to give a narrative to the year. And Moss Levy was selected to prepare the next one, so the 2018-19 audit as well. So they had 3 years, so this will be their third year. And they are currently preparing the engagement letter for the next year, and they should start their testing by the end of this May for the next audit. And with any questions, any line items, I'd be happy.
Any questions?
I've got one. I'm still scrolling down. Oh, there it is. On page 16 in the packet, I'm not sure what page it is in the hard copies, but it's talking about the page that has capital assets on it and a paragraph. It talks about the community fire station is provided to Five Cities Fire Authority for their use for $15,000 per year. The sheriff's substation is leased to the county of SLO for $113,400 per year. I was just wondering what the basis is for setting the rate on the fire station so low.
So the Joint Powers Authority essentially says that we will provide the station free of charge to Five Cities Fire Authority. And after the JPA was formed, what the parties recognized is that in some situations, and I don't know if it's Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach, the ability to distinguish the utility costs was a challenge. And there's so it was an apples and oranges that in some of the communities, Five Cities Fire covers the utility costs, and other communities they don't. So they don't cover our utility costs because we can't separate them out from this building. And as an equalizer, instead they give us $15,000 in rent, which is essentially to help cover the utility costs for the Five Cities Fire Authority. And that really is a big contrast to, of course, we rent out the sheriff's, we lease the sheriff's building based on the agreement that was 2002. And basically there what the sheriff's, what the county does is they pay for our annual mortgage on the construction of that building. So you look at those $2 amounts and you say, boy, that's pretty drastic differences between what we're leasing the fire station for versus what we're leasing the sheriff's substation for. And, you know, that's sort of the explanation is that for fire, we're supposed to give it free of charge, but because we cover utilities, it's an approximation of how much they give back to us for that.
Thank you.
I have a follow-up comment.
Yes.
So in the district's, you know, overall efforts for that we've been working on for a few years and, you know, getting the financial statements and everything back together, and, you know, in prior years we had big, huge issues in terms of interfund debt and cleaning up all that stuff. I kind of want to acknowledge Carrie here because she started a few years ago in the first audit. You know, I took the lead on, and she helped with. In the second audit, we kind of did it 50-50. This audit was 100% Carrie. You know, 99.9% Carrie. You know, I found one thing, and she even pointed out, well, that's the way it was last year. But she really has done a wonderful job in helping make sure that all of this is done. It's done the earliest that we've had it done in probably more than 5 years. It's all pretty well on track. It's good. I compliment her. And also just want to let your board that it's part of her performance goals that when she got this audit done, she got, you know, that career series promotion last week. So, again, job well done and promotion well deserved.
Congratulations. Yeah. I remember when I arrived on the board, and I think they were 3 years behind. Weren't we 3 or 4 years behind on the audit?
That was before me.
Yes, before
but
you.
But what happens when you fall 3, 4 years behind on an audit, the shape of those audits is really bad. I mean, they are, I'm not going to say it's guesswork, but they are. We found details after that 3 and 4 year audits that still required a lot of cleanup, and that's really what Carrie's referring to. In my first couple years, I identified a lot of that stuff. I really started cleaning it up. She helped with, you know, the final cleanup, that's for sure, and then she's implemented the way it's supposed to be implemented. So
I know one of them, even the auditor, said they were guessing. You know, the whole audit was just a guesstimate. Wasn't really pretty. Anyway,
well, if
you
want to do a
much.
Quick comparison to, you know, I know of another community where on their audit for last year, they show a negative cash balance in one of their funds. And I'm like, how's that possible? There's no such thing as negative cash. So some of the challenges that Oceano faced in prior years are some of the same challenges that some of the other communities face today. And it's good to know that we're on... you know, that our financial statements are really solid right now. We have some fiscal issues associated with making sure that we address how are we going to fund the deferred infrastructure in the community. So there's some 2020 will be a year where we're going to be addressing how do we fund and deferred infrastructure. But the basic stability of the district is here.
And no, Carrie, you can't leave.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. I see no hearing items. Received written communications. None.
None.
Late communications, none. future agenda items. Any comments? Should we then move on to closed session? Please report out.
Okay. President White, would you take public comment on closed session?
Yes, I would like public comment on closed session. Anybody got any comments? Okay, thank
okay.
you.
Board adjourns to closed session pursuant to Government Code 54956.9A. This is conference with legal counsel in regards to the Santa Maria Valley Water Conservation District versus City of Santa Maria litigation. Item 5B, pursuant to Government Code 54957, public employment, general manager, district engineer / assistant general manager. And item 5C, pursuant to Government Code 54956.92, it's conference with the district legal counsel regarding anticipated litigation. There is one matter.
Okay. Do we have an estimate of time in case anybody wanted to wait?
I would estimate it'd be no more than 15 minutes. It's going to be a pretty quick closed session.
But that would be the last business we have on the evening.
Yeah, and it would just be for the purpose of finding out if we have any reportable actions coming out of closed session.
Yeah.
So generally speaking, we'll let AGP wrap it up, and if there are any reportable actions, then we would notify those at the next meeting.
Okay.